Welcome to The Gauge, a new podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations happening in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets.
Welcome back to an episode of The Gauge. I'm delighted to have Darren Cox, who is a multifaceted career, most recently at the Formula One. Darren, welcome.
Thank you for having me on, Sean.
Pleasure. As with most guests, I'd like to hear a little bit of your story. It'd be great if you could say in your own words how you got here. I'd love to also hear the Gran Turismo film reference for our listeners.
Yes, as you say, a highlight of the last year has been the fact that I was involved in a Hollywood movie called Gran Turismo, which is based on an idea I had in 2005, where I thought it would be a good idea to see if we could find drivers that could transfer their skills from PlayStation into real world driving. And the film charts my story behind the scenes of trying to get that project off the ground, and then follows one of the drivers, a guy called Jan Mardenborough, who indeed had never sat in a racing car before. We put him in one only due to the fact he was a good Gran Turismo driver on the PlayStation. So I've been lucky enough that Sony Pictures and Columbia made a movie about that. I'm even more lucky that they chose a chap called Orlando Bloom to play my part, which is quite funny. Still saying that out loud makes me smirk. I did ask for Jack Black to play me, but apparently he wasn't available. So they picked Orlando. So yeah, that's an exclamation mark on a so far nearly 30-year history in the motor industry and motorsport industry, as you say, in recent years, mainly involved in Formula One, previously to that, involved in sports cars at Le Mans, etc. So yeah, a past involved in motorsport, but I guess relevance to what you're talking about, always interested in the technology of motorsport, and not just the bits on the cars, but also the stuff that goes around them. And that's why I got into the gaming side, because the transferable skills and transferable technology between what was gaming, we now call it simulation, into the real world has been something that's fascinated me. And I guess I'm at the leading edge of that particular space, as well as having done quite a lot in both worlds separately. So running the Mercedes Formula One esports team, we won a couple of world championships in the virtual world, but also running the biggest independent F1 media company as well. So that is a very, very potted history of an exceedingly long and laborious career in motorsport and automotive.
It sounds a lot of fun. I'm sure there's a lot of work behind it too. I'd love to drill in a bit. I mean, one of the themes on The Gauge is to explore innovation in digital technologies, and we hear tons of crypto names in Formula One kind of crossing paths on a few levels, not just in sponsorship, but some other more digital innovations. Could you elaborate, based on your knowledge and experience, some of these sponsorships, where they're coming from, what's the story behind them? And then maybe in the second piece, a little bit more on that digital innovation layer. What's actually working, what's not working?
Yeah, Formula One historically has always been at the forefront of sponsorship in sport. If you look back into the 60s, the cars were normally painted in the colours of their own country of origin. So that's why we have the Ferrari red, for being from Italy. British Racing green is so called because the cars of that era were painted green, etc., etc. And a chap called Colin Chapman, who probably one of the great innovators in the sport, was the first to have real sponsorship on a Formula One car, and it was a cigarette brand. And to be honest, from that moment on, from the 60s all the way through till tobacco sponsorship was banned in sport, Formula One's been at the forefront. And Formula One was funded, its global growth was mainly funded from a team's point of view via cigarette sponsorship, and of course was also highly involved in the sponsorship via alcohol companies. And it goes through phases. And the latest phase we have today is in finance companies, in tech companies. We've got everyone from Dell, Google, and a number of others, people like CrowdStrike, etc., from a sort of technology point of view. But if you rewind 4 or 5 years, again, Formula One was at the forefront of sports sponsorship with the crypto space. At one point, every team had one, if not two, crypto partners, whether that be, you know, on the token side, whether that be on the trading side. It was the thing to have from a Formula One team's point of view. And obviously, as your listeners and yourself know better than I, at that time, there was a huge amount of investment in a number of different areas, not just Formula One, around that space. And some of those still are in place. Aston Martin still have crypto.com on the side of their cars. The McLaren, one of their key sponsorship deals, which is highlighted on their decals on the side of their car very prominently, is OKX. So there is still quite a lot of involvement there, to the extent that what was the Alfa Romeo team as a sponsor of what is normally called the Sauber team, the title sponsorship was Alfa Romeo. This year, 2024, is the Stake brand, which obviously is involved in crypto in a number of different ways. So there is a huge amount of money coming from the space into Formula One. But what didn't work, to answer the second part of your question, was the fan tokenization approach. There was a number of attempts to make that work, a number of attempts to engage fans in that, and various levels of success, but not one was sustainable. We had a lot that were really seen by the fans as a ripoff, and others that just didn't get the traction that the partners expected them to. And I think part of that was just skepticism of the Formula One fans. There was too much requirement for the fans to invest their money rather than there being any upside at first. I was involved in a few of these conversations early on. As I say, I was involved in a shareholder and CEO of a media company that was predominantly focused on Formula One. And we had a number of conversations with partners, which didn't come to anything. And probably because we were saying, you've got to provide evidence of your credibility. You've got to provide evidence of your value add to the sport and to the fans before you ask the fans to invest in something. You've got to engage them. You've got to give something back. And then they might trust you. They might trust your brand and then come on board and part with their own money. And I don't think that happened. I think there was a real rush to try and drive revenue early on to try and maybe recoup some of those big numbers that people were investing into the sponsorships, and most of them therefore fell flat on their face. So it has been a bit of a ride. I think there's some stability now within the sponsors that are there. I think it is more of a brand play now, which most sponsors in Formula One are there for that. It's one of the most televised sports. I read a report this week that said that the Formula One race in Las Vegas had the most eyeballs of any sports event ever hosted in Las Vegas globally. So that includes all those massive fights that have been staged there over the years. Formula One outshone and outpointed them in terms of the amount of eyeballs that watched that race. So from a brand point of view, I think that the partners are still there, but they've really backed away from the token side of things. But I think, again, to elaborate on your second part of your question, there is still an opportunity. And that opportunity comes back to where we were in gaming. I think the ability to engage people that game within the racing genre and help them with their gaming experience, there is a huge opportunity there. And I know a number of different players are involved in that. Animoca Brands have invested a huge amount of money. They have a number of different studios working on Web3 and tokenized platforms within a bunch of different games, and that might well work. It's a very concerted effort, and I think for me that is very much an area where there will be a big upside for the industry on both the crypto side and also on the Formula One side. That marrying of technology but also with the engagement that sport brings.
A wonderfully robust response to a rather complex question, so thank you. I'd like to get a little bit further in that theme around that transition, and you named beautifully. I can call you Orlando for a minute, perhaps.
Luckily, we're not recording this in vision, right? It's just audio. So for anyone listening, I'm his absolute twin. Although when I say twin, it's probably more DeVito Schwarzenegger twins rather than actual biological twins.
Well, I would venture to suggest otherwise, but we've seen success, obviously, with the film in the shift from a digital to a real world application of skills learned. You mentioned the BMW esports team. The traditional world is now playing in the other side. They're developing digital first propositions to engage and franchise. I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on how these two worlds are coming together. And we hear the metaverse, for example, but the idea of a digital space that behaves like reality and vice versa. What do you think on that?
Well, in a number of areas, as I've said, Formula One has been at the forefront, and the whole sort of raison d'etre of Formula One historically has been to push technology forward that could then be used in automotive. To be honest, that's a load of nonsense in most cases. Very rarely do you see a application used in motorsport that is genuinely then improved via that motorsport route and then put back into automotive. Probably the most famous in our industry is disc brakes, which were something that Jaguar introduced at Le Mans in the 50s. But if you look at these cars today, they look nothing like the cars that are on the road. They are trying to increase downforce. That's the main aim of what they're trying to achieve with the looks of those cars. And yet I've got friends that have moved from motorsport into automotive engineering. And what are they doing? They're trying to reduce drag. I mean, absolutely everything that they're trying to do is trying to make the car not look stupid so that people will buy it, but absolutely reduce the drag, because we are going to see, and we are seeing, the era of SUVs, big 4x4s that are powered by electric combustion, so propulsion. So to do that, they're massively heavy anyway. To do that, then you start squaring that size with the size of the battery. Something's got to give. You can't get the weight out of it. So therefore, you have to try and reduce the aero drag. So probably the cleverest guy I know from motorsport in terms of an engineering side is now running aerodynamics for Honda in the US. And his main job is trying to reduce the drag on SUVs. Formula One can really benefit from technology. And one of those things, actually, which is hidden, because everyone talks about in this space Formula E, because obviously that is, if those people that are listening are not aware of Formula E is, don't worry, you're not alone. No one cares. It's the electric, supposedly equivalent of Formula One. No one's watching it. It's basically a internal communication messaging for the manufacturers that are involved. But in Formula One, the battery is really, really important. And the whole hybrid side of the Formula One powertrain is very, very important, to the extent that in a new rule change in 2026, 50% of the power of Formula One cars has to come from the electric side. That will drive development in battery technology, engine power, energy recovery, motor technology, et cetera, to the extent that two new brands have come into Formula One off the back of it. Audi are in Formula One, and Ford are back in Formula One. Not because the internal combustion engine is really important, but because of those rule change. They are coming back in 2026 because they can see that there will be benefit of their engineers understanding better in a high pressure environment about electrical systems on the powertrain. So that's really interesting. And that technology is crossing over. But there's something even more interesting. It's something you alluded to around what I now understand to be called the digital twin in technology parlance. And that really was the start of my idea of the film in 2005, which was you have got millions of young adults, I don't call them kids because that was a misnomer as well, young adults playing racing games that are actually close to reality in terms of the transferable skills. That's using Moore's law and everything else, that's massively increased in terms of the real link between the two, virtual and real world, to the extent that this weekend, it's the Chinese Grand Prix. You'll see two cars on track, but there is a third car that's running during the weekend in the factories. There will be a team of people on a simulator. The third car, the virtual car, the digital triplet, if you like, of the two cars that are racing on track. There'll be a bunch of engineers and a driver sitting in that car replicating what's happening in the real world. They can do more than 50% more simulation in that car. So when the cars stop going around the track in Japan, there will be a debrief at the track. between the track and the factories in the UK and in Italy. And they will say, the car was doing X, we need to make the car do Y. Guys back in the factory in the virtual car, can you go and try that, please? So they'll try different wing angles, different tyre pressures, different suspension geometry, whatever it might be, to try and improve the car before the car goes out on track the following day. And such now is the correlation between the two things, they can say with relatively strong confidence, we have done this thing. We believe that the car will go quicker in the real world because of what we've just done overnight. That is, A, obviously massively saving a huge amount of cost. Back in Michael Schumacher's day, he was allegedly testing 4 days a week in a real world, in a real car, just going round and round in circles. They can do that now, but without actually spending any money on tyres or fuel or flights or track hire or whatever it might be. And it has completely changed the way that Formula One teams develop cars, to the extent that Max Verstappen, who, if you are not watching Formula One, by the way, if you haven't started watching yet, don't bother. It's a really boring phase of Formula One at the moment. Max Verstappen, who's winning everything, demanded a driver that was a test driver for another team in the virtual world be signed to his team because he knew he could improve his car by being the best driver in the virtual world and helping him rather than helping someone else. And there's articles that Max Verstappen is quoted as saying he's my best teammate because he is the one that's setting the car up for him and doing the hard work for him, but in the virtual world and not at the track. So from this idea I had in 2005, I obviously didn't know that this was going to be the route and the journey that was taken. But today, when it is so important to have the virtual world in tandem and working together with, from a development point of view, from a performance point of view, the people in the real world, and it will only get more and more important. To the extent, I would imagine at some point, the governing body of Formula One will say they have to restrict the amount of time that you can use on a simulator, because otherwise they'll run that thing 24 hours a day and that it will spiral out again into something as Formula One normally does, where the guy that's got the most time or effort or best kit will benefit more because they've got more time to spend in the simulator. So fascinating for those people that are interested in that sort of digital twin theory, that in Formula One, you can see it literally with your own eyes, that that's what's happening between the virtual world and the real world.
That's fascinating. I had these images of NASA mission control and the single astronaut, but they're game planning and scenario planning for as much as they have to because of the amount of money behind not just the kit, but the branding and everything that rides on it.
What's interesting is that when I was racing a long time ago, one of my competitors' dads was a Concorde pilot, and he was telling me how realistic the Concorde simulator was to actually flying the plane. So I've done some research into this. That project was kickstarted in 1974, a cost of £3 million, which I hate to think what that number is today. And it was so accurate, he was telling me this at the turn of the millennium, that it was just like flying the plane. The graphics weren't as good, but everything else, the feel, the touch, the movement, was just like flying the real plane. And that was one of the things I was thinking, hang on, we're underplaying this in motorsport. If aviation have been doing this all this time, we're missing a trick here. And the Formula One teams saw that. And so the first Formula One team to start this started the project in 1998 and didn't really get it going until 2006. It took them that long to get it right. So in this respect, aviation was way ahead. And as you talk about NASA, it's gone even further with both aviation and space as well.
I'm wondering if we look at the Star Trek future, if you will, can indulge me for a second, but the idea of a holodeck where you have a virtual space that behaves physically. We've started to see with the likes of the Unreal graphics engine, for example, or even more recently, Sora with OpenAI, and what they can create in terms of virtual worlds that behave according to physical law at really low barriers to entry. Do you think we'll ever get a stage where the sport itself is at a crux where you have physical cars commanded by people not even in the car?
There was a project called RoboRace a few years ago, which unfortunately had some very disappointing public faults. The first public race that they were streaming, literally the car went off the line, two cars went off the line, and one just went straight into the pit wall and destroyed itself within 100 yards. There's a project on at the moment, or in fact there's two, but the big one, which is getting all the coverage, is in Abu Dhabi, which is an autonomous racing series, which is running cars that are just a bit slower than Formula One cars. That hasn't happened yet, but it's very well funded and seemingly very well marketed. There is a group out of Indianapolis around the Indy 500 program, and with that technology, that are doing the same thing. I launched this F1 media company in February 2020. So we had the best journalists, the best backroom staff, we had the best content creators. We set up the first real focused digital first media company. We had our guys down in Australia. You know what comes next, March 2020, they stopped racing. The first thing we did, because of my background in gaming as well as real racing, by the Sunday, we had the virtual race up and running. In fact, Max Verstappen wasn't world champion at that time, was one of the drivers. And we ended up making a TV show for ESPN and Eurosport and online for 18 weeks during lockdown. And we had a legend series where we had Mario Andretti, Emerson Fittipaldi, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Sebastian Vettel, Jacques Villeneuve, the old guys, right? At the time, Mario was in his 80s. Racing each other online virtually. Absolutely brilliant. I got a bunch of model cars made of the virtual cars that were not real that the guys were racing. And that was just brilliant. And we had tens of thousands of people watching online. It was live on ESPN, not ESPN2, not on a streaming, ESPN, Saturday afternoon, Memorial Weekend. If you listen in America, Memorial Weekend is huge. The biggest one-day spectator of a sporting event in America is the Indy 500. We ran the Indy 500 virtually for IndyCar. And it was massive. And everyone, bunches of people, agencies, everything rushed into esports. Suddenly, this is a big thing. The end of lockdown came. Formula One was one of the first sports out of lockdown. Brilliant job by everyone at Formula One. No one cared. Nobody cared about esports suddenly. It literally was just like a light switch went off because there was something else. So my answer to your question is no, because if you've still got the real thing happening, why would you want to watch something else that isn't real? However, something I've wanted to do almost as long as I had that idea in 2005 about taking gamers into races is, could you drive the 21st car in Formula One? There's 20 cars in Formula One today. Could you drive the 21st car? That is happening. It's been happening. Everyone's tried to do it. But with the low latency now that we have, with the ability to get the data from Formula One, there's a couple of changes in the way that they have to contract the teams in terms of their data, which is slightly sticky at the moment. That will happen. So currently EA Sports have got the franchise for the F1 game. I know for a fact they are working on that happening. So you can see it at home. Rather than just watching the race go on, you can try and race in that real race. Now it opens up so many questions. Clever technologists like yourself will be able to tell me, okay, well, what happens if you've then overtaken Fernando Alonso, which means he's now not behind Lewis Hamilton because you're in between them. What happens to that in the real race? Because he is actually just behind Lewis. Someone's got to write that algorithm and understand that, which just blows my mind about how that works. But there are clever people working on autonomous cars on the road, which have got to come up with those scenarios as well. And I've seen some really interesting reports about how you're going to do that in terms of safety and decision making. So it's coming. I don't know. Someone with a much, much bigger brain than me has got to work out all the scenarios. But that is the next step for engagement in sport. And really, Formula One's the only one that could do it. You can't suddenly play a doubles match with Venus Williams, or you can't go and doubles partner with Tiger Woods in the Ryder Cup. Formula One, again, has got a really massive opportunity to do that. And the autonomous side that you mentioned is very interesting from a technology transfer point of view. But as a sporting point of view, I think people want to see, unfortunately, real people crashing, not just a computer crashing.
Yeah, the thrill of the sport has different connotations when there's someone in the cockpit. It would be remiss of me not to kind of get some steer from you about the wider business of Formula One. There's a whole world of correlated businesses that encircle the main event. And you've named a few of the opportunities at hand. It would be great to get a little bit more color as well as to some of the things you're seeing which are of interest.
Well, there's a number of things at play here. Everyone says, oh, it's a Netflix effect. This show called Drive to Survive, in its sixth season. The first couple of seasons are really good because people didn't realize what was happening. They were being filmed behind the scenes. It was my favorite sports documentary. Is one of the first. It was about Graham Taylor when he was the England manager, and I don't think he knew what he was getting himself in for. He was fully mic'd up. He was very honest to the cameras, and that sort of happened in the first two seasons of Drive to Survive, that First of all, by the way, Ferrari and Mercedes didn't sign up for it. They weren't being filmed. No one really knew what was going to come out. It was being filmed and they were just being natural. I'm watching the one, the season six, and it is clear that people, it's almost scripted now. People are saying what they think they should be saying. But the opening up of Formula One behind the scenes, and it's not just Drive to Survive, it's social media, it's the ability for the teams and drivers to film content. Now, in the Bernie Eccleston era, the drivers and the teams weren't allowed to film their own content in the garages, in the paddock. So it wasn't like Liberty are this bunch of geniuses that have just come up with this new business model. It's just let people do what they should be doing. And that's happened. And all of those things, plus this explosion of interest in the sport during COVID, because Drive to Survive landed at exactly the right moment. Everyone was watching season one and season two, and then Formula One were the first ones back. The push of Liberty Media, which had been really smart, into America at one point, not many years ago, there were no races in America. There's now three. There will be four within the next 5 years. It's grown massively. I think Formula One was bought for $8 billion, if I remember rightly, and that was 5 or 6 years ago. It's now worth north of 20, 25, and rumours of already being bought and the number being agreed. But just huge growth in every area, whether that be social media following, whether that be fans at the track, merch sales, everything else. So clearly, everything should go up. And if you've seen the numbers 10 years ago, if you had enough money, you'd have bought most Formula One teams. The most recent sale was Williams. I think it was $180 million. We're now already 4 years later in the stage where everyone's talking about an F1 franchise, even though they're not a franchise, being worth $1 billion. That's huge growth. What hasn't happened, and by the way, it's now very difficult to buy into a team. I know investors with big money, with good reputations, that just want to be part of this show, can't get their money in. It's really difficult to get it in, and you're not getting value. But there are a bunch of other businesses on the periphery outside of the teams that are fantastic businesses, have grown just as quickly, but are under the radar. They're F1 licensees. They are suppliers to F1 teams. They're suppliers to F1. They are growing in the same way that the teams are. They've not been seen. And as I say, my previous business, a media business, is a great example. There's huge growth in, as I say, merchandise. Formula One can see this. They invested $500 million in the Las Vegas race themselves. Their normal model is a promoter takes on the responsibility of the race in each of the different locations. Formula One did it themselves. They thought there was enough money to be made. They bought a piece of land just off the Las Vegas Strip. They built a permanent pit complex there, which will be a round-the-year facility for Formula One to rent out and to use as a brand benefit for all of the teams and for Formula One. And they also bought what was the sort of external events company that was running all the events for the hospitality from Quint last year for $333 million. So Formula One sees that. It's buying up some of the assets, but there's a bunch of assets sitting around the outside, which I think someone very soon will, a light bulb will go in there on in their head and realize that there's a huge amount of value in those assets that haven't been realized yet, and perhaps that there's a growth opportunity and a profit opportunity as well as the one that's already been taken by Liberty and by the team owners.
Super interesting. I could go on for a long time, but I'd like to give you one opportunity just to say any final thoughts. I appreciate the worlds of crypto and Formula One have been perhaps interesting bedfellows, but it sounds like there are quite a few strands of the wider digitization story that we can draw. Final words, please.
One of the things I think has been missed, and I think it may be too late because of the facts I just gave previously about the valuations of the Formula One teams, but what, let's call it Web3 in totality, could do and could have done was given fans a closer relationship with the teams. Now, Williams are doing a good job of that with one of their primary sponsors, and I apologise if I mispronounce it, but Kraken. They're doing a really good job of trying to engage the fans in Formula One. And again, they've learned from the previous examples of not giving value to the fans first. And if anyone from Williams is listening, James Bowers, who's the head of commercial, I think they're doing a brilliant job of giving the value back to the teams, giving those people that have digital assets in the team more insight behind the scenes. To be fair, Williams are doing that in a number of different areas. But I think they could go further. And as I say, I think it's a bit late now to do this just because of the valuations. But I've always had this idea, and it could work in the lower formulas. It could work in sports cars, but a fan-funded team. I mean, why wouldn't it? We've seen some of those examples in football, not necessarily particularly successful, but tokenization of ownership, a fan-managed team would be fantastic. There's that brilliant example of the British football coach who was fantastic on Football Manager that ended up running a high-end Bundesliga team in Germany and doing very well. The fans have a huge amount of opinions. In any sport, I've got a huge amount of opinions. And it seems like in Formula One, because you're not just ordinarily, you're not an Arsenal fan or a Tottenham fan, you're a Formula One fan. You might like a driver, but the driver moves, so you're in a different team. So there's a whole range of different opinions, and lots of people have a favourite second team or a favourite second driver. So there is a huge amount of opinion and knowledge in this space, because you gather a huge amount of knowledge like you do in most fandom in any sports. But to put that into a ownership or a decision-making approach, I think someone should do something like that. And again, I think Formula One's done. I think it's too big a place, but why not do something in sports car racing, for example, with younger people now loving the supercars. There's supercars that race at Le Mans. Why not have the Lamborghini that's fan-owned, and they choose the three drivers that race, and they choose when the pit stop is? And for me, that would be the ultimate expression of Web3 working from a fan engagement point of view in sport.
Who knows where the fan tokens will go? Dan, thank you so much for your time. This one really, really interesting.
Thanks for having me on. It's made me think differently to my normal day job, so I appreciate that. I'm sure our conversation will carry on offline.
Until then, thank you.
Cheers.